Do I have everybody's attention now?
Now it's time for Jason Martin and Vol for Life Ramon Foster.
Powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors.
Together, they are J-Mart and Ramon on 104.5 The Zone.
It's the first of the month.
Wake up.
I know that's not the song, but Ramon has been singing Bone Thugs
earlier
this week. Not the first of the month, but wake up works. This is Kanye. He also wakes you up. We wake you up on 104.5 The Zone. J Mart and Ramon. He's Ramon Foster at Ramon Foster. I'm Jason Martin at J Mart Radio. We're at J Mart and Ramon. Jonathan Schaefer, more important to both of us, at Schaefer on Sports.
Glad you recognize that.
Look. Look, man, game recognized game, right?
That's all you want, really. Just recognize me, baby.
Actually, you know what? I know something else you might want.
What's that?
How about a UT tailgate set going into this weekend?
Can I get it, too?
You can. Yes. Well, you can't. You actually are an employee of the radio station. Don't think that works. I don't think Drew Carey can get the car that Snoop came out of on Price is Right a couple of days ago.
No, he can't.
Look, if it happens to be missing out of the closet, I have no idea what happened.
Schaefer just incriminating himself right now. Or basically saying, Ramon, you take what you want. I'll look the other way.
Schaefer,
that's superstar treatment right there. You're going to get away with it, but like the backup offensive lineman... Yeah.
They can't.
He's going to be fined and suspended for the same thing. Wow, we've already got callers. I haven't even told you to call yet. 7370663. That's 9663. 737-ZONE. Qualify right now to win a University of Tennessee Volunteers tailgate set. Includes a 10x10 UT tent, two chairs, table, cooler, and more. The winner will be chosen 5:30 p.m. tomorrow on 3HO. You'll already be listening to Brent and Dawn, so you might as well win in the process. 737-ZONE is your phone number right now, 0663 or 9663.
I'll tell you something, too, about getting a free tent also. The fact that if you have one of those tents and they break on you, man, you don't want to buy a new one. So if I can get a free one, I will. So that might be my phone call coming in on the board right now, just so you know.
Wow, you're doing that thing without actually even holding a phone. That is super impressive, man. Truly. The media poll came out yesterday.
Trash.
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to be a fan of this. Here is the preseason media poll for the SEC East. Vol week in full effect. Eric Ainge joins us in about 10 minutes or so here. Florida, number one, 53 first place votes. Georgia, number two at 43, who you've already said Tennessee will beat.
Yeah.
And UT at three.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where most people thought they would be. But the question that I have to ask all of you out there, is that good enough for Vols fans to be third in the East again? Because basically, that feels like you're standing in place.
Standing in place. Which is why I jump out there and say, if there's a year we're going to make a leap, it's this one. You know, and the thing about these polls and, you know, everybody assuming stuff about anything this year is there's always – Georgia, Florida always get a pass. Georgia's always – Georgia to me is the school – Is the girl that goes to the prom 4 years in a row and expects to win the
homecoming queen?
Thank you.
Well, what am I talking about? You don't go to the prom and homecoming.
Prom queen. She's trying to be the prom queen every year, and they never just give it to them. Okay, like Georgia to me is a lot of
Georgia's the bridesmaid.
Yes, forever. Okay, so for the fact that they get all the credit for just winning one or two games during the season, I don't think they're as strong as you give them credit for. I think the intimidation factor of Georgia supposing to be good or Florida also is nonsense to me. The mindset of turning over your team and becoming the team that you want to be is based on the guys that you have in that room. And I think Tennessee have a bunch of those guys in that room that say, hey, we're going to make it happen. They have a fearless leader aside from Pruitt and Trey Smith. If you have a guy like him on your team that's bringing one – he's bringing change to those guys outside of the locker room and inside of the locker room. And I ought to tell you the mentality or the standard that's being raised around that university. So, to me, I'm still rolling with what I said. I think Tennessee has a strong shot of winning the East.
All SEC media team. First team offense, the aforementioned Trey Smith.
Yeah.
Third team, Wanya Morris. And That's just impressive because he's young.
Young.
And it's because he got some reps last year, but it shows the skill set.
Yeah.
Second team D, Henry To'o, who had the quote of the year, I think, so far. Well, Jim Chaney had a pretty good quote about, if you don't see Eric Gray or Ty Chandler out there, it's because I've had a heart attack. He said that a few days ago, yeah, which was good. But To'o saying he's really itching to hit something that's not orange. That right there goes on a t-shirt. That goes in a locker room. Like that's a walk-off shot. That's
like the Tannehill and one. Exactly. Break the wrist, walk away.
Whenever you hear me, that just means break the wrist, snap the wrist, and walk away.
And I love that about To'o too. And you have coaches within the organization saying that this kid is going to be one of the best players to come through this university. That is high praise, man.
Well, he's also taking over for Batuli, potentially as a leader. I heard Chad Withrow ask that question on Midday 180 to Austin Price earlier this week. Was just like, look, Batuli was the very definition of a leader.
A leader,
defense. Is To'o ready to step up and take that mantle? And is it fair to ask that question? And Austin Price said, absolutely, it's fair to ask that question. It looks like, and then watching that presser and the way To'o kind of owned that room, I said, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I know what this is.
And I've seen this happen before, too, at the university. When you had a guy like Kevin Simon and Kevin Burnett, and then you had a guy that was in my class, Gerard Mayo, walked right into those shoes, okay? Gerard went on to be a first-round pick, and it was awesome to see this, too, but he's on the first-year ballot of being a Hall of Famer. You know, I don't know how it's going to shake out, but that is something that you want, and you see those type of players. I'm not saying that To'o has to fill those shoes, but, I mean, they're talking about him being able to do that, considering Batuli's gone this year.
So Smith, Morris, To'o, third-team defense, Bryce Thompson, and first-team special teams, Brent Samaglia, entering his 12th year. Feels like he's been kicking there forever.
Special teams, you.
Oh man, we lost a call that I really wanted us to take based on that description. I hope he calls back.
Don't go.
Well, the description was me being a little gaslighting, but yeah.
Oh, I thought that's exactly okay. Well, good. I like to know that you're gaslighting us in the comments.
Absolutely.
That's perfect.
Yep.
Who raised you? Huh? Is this what you choose to do on a Thursday when we got a heck of a lineup on Thursday Night Football? Huh?
Jabroni. Wait, we have a heck of a lineup on Thursday Night Football.
You hear that?
I thought Miami and Jacksonville were playing tonight.
Man.
You see my little sarcasm come out right there?
Although I'm more excited just because I like watching. I want to see what Jacksonville's offense looks like again. No. I want to see if Minshew goes out there and continues to try and make his case that Trevor Lawrence ain't coming to Jacksonville.
Wouldn't that suck to say that, hey, internally we're tanking for him?
Well, look, it already happened. They didn't take Deshaun Watson, and they didn't take Patrick Mahomes because they had Blake Bortles, who unfortunately is now the backup quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah. Hits home, huh?
That one hurt. Did you see my voice kind of crack at the end of that?
But I can't even talk about Blake Bortles because he knocked us out of the playoffs, too. So
I'm still bitter about that, by the way.
Yeah, I'm double scarred here also.
Look, man, he was on some kind of – it was an all-time hot.
Say it. Lightning struck in the
ball. I mean, he also played one of the worst playoff games I've ever seen during that same postseason against the Bills. It was him and Tyrod.
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, he didn't play bad against us.
So 8-2, the two losses you have, Alabama.
And going to Auburn is the only thing. Alabama.
See, that's interesting that you would pick Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn is a tough place to play at. And I know there's no crowd, but Auburn is one of those. They have something that's, with them being able to be a stable university. I think they compete very well all the time. And so what I just look
athletes,
at is.
Fast guys.
Yeah, exactly. So they grab that Louisiana-Alabama athlete a lot. So. Those are the two that I question. The East teams really don't bother me as much. And then you look at A&M, and you also just look at the other guys. Arkansas, like, if you can't count those as wins, then I don't know what we're doing as a university. Like you said, to stay in the same spot in the mud, no, that's not the plan. And change is always ever happening. And I think it's, to me, I might sound ludicrous saying this, but it's also ludicrous to me that people think that you should just stay where you are. Like, Tennessee's is, of course, in recent history, hasn't done what we expected them to do, but this isn't a team of the past. I think you can all be encouraged by what's happening right now, and I don't think it's insane to think that they would take a leap in the right direction this year.
Eric Ainge knows a little bit about the Vols.
A little bit.
And he's been out there about Cade Mays. He's been out there about a lot of things. Yeah, I saw the look on your face right there. There's a lot going on, but the good news is there's 2 days away from a SEC slate on a Saturday.
You got it.
And I actually think Tennessee might be playing the most intriguing game of that opening slate because of how important it actually is. Eric Ainge will have his say on our say and on the Vols in advance in 4 minutes. At J Mart and Ramon on Twitter, 104.5 The Zone.
The Midday 180. You now get Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky 1 hour sooner today from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
It's my team. It's my quarterback.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Reminds me of Road Trip. Underrated comedy, man.
Yes.
One of Todd Phillips' first films. At J Mart and Ramon on Twitter. He's Ramon Foster, Vol for Life. 11 years in the NFL. Hopefully 11 years or 22 or 33 with us.
Yes.
I'm Jason Martin at J Mart Radio. We welcome in. He's on Twitter at Eric Ainge 3. I would tell you how to spell his name, but if you live in this state, you already know. Eric, welcome in, man. It's game week. How are you?
Hey, what's up, boys?
Not much. EA, that's – hey, you are my quarterback. And I'll say this. We had some good times up in Knoxville, man, off the field and on the field, man. You are a guy that I enjoy playing with, just so you know.
Well, considering you played protecting Big Ben for over a decade, I'll take that as beyond a compliment.
No problem, EA. Thanks for coming on, man. But you know, of course, the first thing I just got to ask you, of course – you had a conversation with Cade yesterday about some stuff that was tweeted out from maybe a wrong source. How did that come about, and what was that conversation with you and he, man?
So, Cade and I both know where I got the information, okay. And it's not even from a UT person. It kind of reminded me of a fellow Nashville guy, Travis Haney, did an article on Butch Jones. Do you remember that, J-Mark?
Yeah, I do.
So, and it was like people that it was inside the program that were saying stuff, and you don't ever want to be like that. Not, I why wouldn't I believe when there was a Georgia person, actually people, because I confirmed it with another person in Georgia that's what it was. And then Kate said, hey, that's not exactly how that went down. And I don't blame him. I mean, as an offensive lineman, you know, you don't want to think that you're, you know, transferring because someone said something, you know, mean to you, like that would be enough to make you want to leave. And I get that, but I think there was, I think there's some other stuff going on there besides just his dad who lost a finger and then the misinformation that I got. But I mean, it's whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, if they don't want that out there, then that's totally their decision. So, I hope he gets cleared. I don't have a lot of faith that it's going to happen now after listening to Greg Sankey talk. But gosh, if he plays on that offensive line, I mean, Ramon, you know,
I mean,
gosh, you can hide one and still have a really good offensive line. This O line, if Kate's playing, they're not hiding any. I mean, they have nothing but good players.
I know. And on the topic of Kate, man, if we get him, that shows a lot. You know, that helps out a whole lot. But in general, though, how do you feel about the growth of this team? You know, I came out and said I feel like we can go 8-2, and everybody looks at me sideways about it. But I'm okay with that because at some point in your career or in your team's trajectory, a stake has to be put in the ground. How do you feel about the growth of this team moving forward under Coach Pruitt?
I mean, I feel like they, you know, I picked them to go 9-3 last year, and they were 7-5. And so that is, you know, obviously – They should have been 9-3, but I think that when you look at this team this year, I mean, I picked them to go 7-3, so I don't think 8-2 is crazy. I mean, are we ready to beat Georgia or and Alabama? I don't know. Are we ready to beat Florida? Hopefully, we'll see. But I think Auburn and Texas A&M are absolutely winnable games for us, and we proved last year down the stretch that we under Pruitt can win all the games we're supposed to. And I think that's the sign of a healthy program. It's are you winning the games you're supposed to? And then how many of the toss up games can you steal? And that's where this team, I really do. I agree with you. That's where I think they are. I mean, I think they should be able to beat South Carolina, Missouri, Vandy, Kentucky, Arkansas. They should win those games. And then how many of those other five can they steal, two or three? I think that's realistic.
Back to Cade real quickly. When the NCAA, Eric, comes out and they accept the appeal, Greg Sankey is usually the smartest guy in the room. I've interviewed him before. I've been in his presence. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. Yesterday in Birmingham, what I heard him say, audio we're going to play later on this hour, actually, here on the program, that felt like passing the buck to me. Like, that didn't seem Greg Sankey-ish. I understand the rule. Like, I understand the value of it in their mind, but there seem to be circumstances, especially in this year, where this just doesn't add up to me.
Yeah, and I think Joey Gatewood transferring to Kentucky from Auburn, he got beat out by Bo Nix, which there's no shame in. Bo Nix is a really good football player, but he just lost the job and wanted to leave. The other two guys that have been cleared by the NCAA, that they're waiting on SEC clearance to play. Cade was a 2-year starter on a program that's a playoff contender, and he would have been the premier lineman returning with all the guys they lost in the draft last year. So for him, and he's draft eligible after this year, why would he leave unless it was just a situation that he felt he could not be a part of anymore? No different than the young man going to Ole Miss. He's saying this situation was bad enough for me. Both kids, by the way, are leaving from Georgia. This was bad enough, and he aired everything yesterday with different situations he's dealt with racism, with local police, and different situations like that. And no one should ever have to endure that. So, I don't know how you see everything going on with these other two guys that were starters at Georgia and decided they needed to be somewhere else. That raises a lot of flags and questions for me alone. I mean, you know how hard it is, Ramon, to work yourself into being a starter somewhere. The last thing you'd want to do when you become a starter is up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. That the whole situation with both of the kids that left Georgia is fishy at best.
Yeah, this wasn't somebody leaving because they couldn't start and they were sulking on the sidelines. I think that you're right. I think that changes the perception of it from external, for sure. And it seems like it would make it more likely that, okay, we should let this guy transfer because clearly something is wrong here. Something is rotten
something's
here.
Up. Yeah, regardless of the details, something's going on.
Yeah. Now, something's going on at Tennessee, including 10 games, and that is a quarterback that might have a little bit of confidence. After what happened in Tuscaloosa, we know how bad it could have gone for JG, but Pruitt kind of rallied around him, showed some love for him, and then Garantano played his guts out pretty much for the rest of that season. You're a quarterback. You know that position. What do you expect, and how confident are you in JG entering this season?
Well, and Ramon remembers this for sure because he was as much a part of it as anybody, but we went from a team my first year under David Cutcliffe, and I was smart, you know, I knew the stuff, and all that. It was pretty, you know, we were pretty good, honestly, in 2006. I think that might have been our best football team. But in 2007, we went and did our self-scout with Jim Bob Cooter and Coach Cut and myself, and we looked at it and we said, you know, we're taking just a few too many sacks. We're not checking in and out of the right run plays enough. We played behind the sticks a little bit too much. And then third and medium to long in the SEC or the NFL, I mean, you just drastically decreased your odds of getting first downs with the edge rushers and the corners that we have in this conference. It's, you got to play ahead of the sticks. And so we made an almost a pact that we were going to have the smartest offensive line, quarterback, running backs. I mean, Arian Foster and Monterio, their ability to handle multiple different protections. We went and threw the ball over 500 times and only took 3 sacks.
Yeah.
Which is an NCAA. And if you guys have both seen me run, it looks. it's been described as a lawn chair falling out of the back of a pickup truck. So to do that, we made an effort. We did that. So, and the only reason that was possible was A, the offensive linemen were capable physically and mentally. And that's obvious, you know, with the co-host of your show right there leading the way. But we also had a deal where I knew every single play who was blocked and who wasn't. Now, we were good enough to block, but you still got to be able to block them.
Yeah.
But we were good enough to do that, and no one ever fooled me knowing when they would bring pressure. So, worst case, I could throw it away. I could throw a check down, signal a hot route, audible, something. And that was because it was the second year under the same coordinator. And this is the first time in Jarrett's career that he's had the same play caller and quarterback coach for 2 years in a row. I think that he will go back to looking like the kid that we saw in the middle to end of the year, which is a kid who's really smart, who takes care of the football, who gets in and out of the right run plays, is capable of making all the reads and making all the throws. He's tough as nails. And all the kid ever does is win the job. I don't know how I get mad at people on social media sometimes, because I'm like, and you're a Tennessee fan and you're actively rooting for this kid to fail because you want to see a highly touted freshman.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We don't need them in the fan base, dude. I mean, if you're actively rooting against the starting quarterback because you have your own agenda, like, bye.
Eric Gaines is our guest here on J Mart and Ramon.
Yeah. And yeah, you bring up a lot of things that correlates to a kid being good. Speak on what it means to have the same coordinator. You know, when Coach Cut came in, there was a lot. The same way that Coach Chaney's there now. You have a mastermind that can get you in the right position, but also you got a quarterback that's been under him for a second year. That means a lot, considering when you change OCs or you have a change in your offense, it can really just reset you. The fact that this offense doesn't have to reset, and again, you lay it on the line with your offensive guys up front, and you got two experienced backs behind you. This having young receivers is a thing, yeah, but you've been in that position too, where you remember when we had Gerald and those guys that you had to coach up, but at that position, you have skill, and that skill usually comes out.
And I think that in this league, especially, and no different than in the NFL, if you can run the football, then you have to be able, when you're in 11, and Chaney majors in 11 personnel, so when you have one tight end out there, one running back and a quarterback, and the other team thinks they're going to play a six-man box of some kind against you and keep two safeties back. If that six-man box can stop you from running the ball, then there really are no good pass plays.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to force them to get another guy in the mix, safety, an extra linebacker, changing personnel, getting out of nickel. You got to make them do something in order to keep them at base, so you're playing against one high look, because then you have the entire playbook, and you can play action off of that. Like, you've got to be able to force teams to get a seventh guy in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anybody on our schedule with the offensive line we have and the running backs. And Jarrett, even last year when he struggled, did a great job of getting us in and out. He understood the run game mechanics and checks. Check with me stuff, this play, check, you know, zone, check opposite, all that kind of stuff that you can do. And I think that we're going to be able to run the football like we did when we had success last year. I mean, there's a reason that Jarrett struggled early, and it's because Callaway and Palmer were getting double teams. The other teams are playing versions of cover two, cover four, cover six, two guys deep, and we're not able to run the football. And that puts a lot of pressure on a quarterback. I mean, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, those guys don't play good when the other team gets to drop seven into coverage with two safeties back. It's just like nobody does. So you've got to be able to run the ball. And I think that Chaney and Will Friend will do a really good job of making sure we are able to put that pressure on the other team. It's an easy game to play when you can run the football. I mean, it's an easy game to call. It's an easy game to quarterback. It's just not that hard, and I don't see teams, you know, there might be a team or two that gets away with it every once in a while, but I mean, our offensive linemen are a bunch of 320, 30 pound, five-star caliber, NFL caliber players. So, I mean, if Cade plays remote, we have the best interior O-line with our guards and center in the country.
In the country. I agree.
In the country. I mean, so I don't know how you can't run the ball. With that, we, you know, how we are at tight end will matter. How we are at the point of attack with the tight ends will matter. But Heck, I wouldn't put it past them with the depth we have to just put another lineman out there and play a jumbo game and run the football at people. I mean, we're going to have options for sure.
Eric, when you look at the 10-game SEC schedule, it's going to be a meat grinder for everybody. I mean, even those that have Arkansas on their schedule, they still have to actually show up and play. Same thing with Vanderbilt. But got to get off to a quick start because of you have just the one open week and you don't have any of the tomato cans, none of the cupcakes that you have to go through. Just how crucial. I've said all off season, the South Carolina game is the key to the whole season. How do you assess this matchup this weekend?
I think Muschamp does a good job of attempting to find unique ways to try to win the box count numbers and stop the run and still put pressure on the quarterback. I don't think they have the guys physically that are just going to be able to whip us up front. I don't think it's going to, in fact, I think it'll be the opposite. So I think that it's going to be a game where it's the first game, I don't think we need to come out, with some trick plays and taking shots and reverse passes. We need to come out and let our linemen tape their ankles a little tighter, their knuckles a little tighter, screw their cleats in the dirt, and go knock the snot out of the other team. Run right at them. Don't run side to side. I mean, you can run a toss play here and there, but pull a guard and run the gap play. Run the zone, inside zone play. Let them all play at the point of attack. Run right at South Carolina. And I think that this will be a game where we can impose our will on them up front and force them to feel like they need to take some shots. And they have to win this game. And they're not going to win very many games this year with the schedule they have, I don't believe. So they're gonna pull all the stops. Don't get beat on the trick plays. Stay deeper than the deepest. Play a little bend, don't break on defense, and run right at them on offense. And take your shots as you will. Because, like you said, J-Mart, our guys are, the pass catchers for the most part are new.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from talking to Jarrett and a few guys over there, they are really, really athletic and really fast. And just because we don't know their names yet and their numbers, and we'll have to look at the program after a week or two, we'll all know their names and their numbers and exactly what they're doing. So they're just because they're new doesn't mean they're not good.
I've got two very experienced Vols in this three-way conversation, and then there's just me kind of sitting here. You guys going to South Carolina, you've done it before, but you ain't doing it this year because of the fan situation.
Yeah.
I haven't played any SEC, so I can't speak to it. I've been in those stands, and I think SC in particular – is one of the more underrated venues in the country in terms of how crazy it gets. But how much is lost in terms of home field advantage and just that whole shook factor that some players can walk in and just not be able to get out of themselves and get past that moment? But how much does that change this season just in terms of it's not going to be 100,000 screaming fans throwing things and all the bells and the cowbells at Mississippi State and all that? Just how does that change as somebody that's been there and seen it?
I mean, communication for home games and away games will basically be the same. And I think we have enough experience on both sides of the ball that I don't know that would have been a deal breaker regardless. I think our guys would be, veterans enough to be able to communicate with each other. And I love the fact that we have linemen that aren't going to be new. Cause Ramon, you know how that is. If you have two brand new linemen playing next to each other, then you better hope the information getting passed is accurate.
It's all hope at that point. Yeah.
But the guys playing next to whoever the center is and guards and tackle, they've all played and most of them have played a lot. So I have all the confidence in the world that we're going to have a limited amount of mental errors, busts. I don't foresee that being a big thing. I think our guys will play sound, fundamental football, and when you don't have to worry about, the biggest thing that you have is it makes the home game momentum factor that you get, it kind of makes it null and void. So you're really just playing you're playing football, man. It's going to be a little different, a little weird, but. Because in the SEC, I don't think we ever played a road game that wasn't full, Moan. I mean, not that I can remember. Maybe at Vandy. But even then, it was usually full of our fans.
It was.
So I it'll be a little weird, but I think it'll just may the best man win this year.
Eric, man, it's always good to catch up with you. We look forward to doing it a lot during the season. Continued success doing what you're doing down in Knoxville. And
yes.
I guess I can say go Vols because I've got two Vols and I don't want to get punched.
You have to right now. EA, man, we really appreciate it, seriously. And anytime you need us, we're right down the street from you, man. And good to hear you again.
Awesome. Yep. Appreciate you guys having me. Have a good day, guys.
Yep, that's Eric Ainge. He's at Eric Ainge 3 on Twitter. The question that I want to pose, and I don't know how long we will have to discuss it, but we're seeing Notre Dame and Wake getting canceled this weekend. That's two Power Five schools. That's probably the highest profile one that I've seen so far, or certainly one of them. What happens when that strikes in the SEC? Jeez. Because chances are it's going to. Mm-hmm. And then a bigger question is, with the Big Ten playing less games than some of these other conferences, how do you figure out who gets into the college football playoff when there's no common opponents anywhere in the country? Those are questions we're going to try to get to the bottom of in 4 minutes. It's at JMart and Ramon on Twitter, 104.5 The Zone.
The Jacksonville Jaguars host the Miami Dolphins on Thursday Night Football. Kickoff is tonight at 7:20 on your home for Thursday Night Football. 104.5 The Zone.
Because in the SEC, I don't think we ever played a road game that wasn't full, Moan. I mean, not that I can remember. Maybe at Vandy. But even then, it was usually full of our fans.
It was.
The reason you come back with that is because of that subtle maybe at Vandy. That's Eric Ainge. He joins us. If you missed any part of that conversation, really good chat with Eric from down in Knoxville. Podcasts. Just search JMart and Ramon from your podcast catcher of choice. You can catch us whenever you want, however you want. You can go back and listen to the stuff that you liked and you want to hear again, which hopefully is going to be all 3 hours every single day.
You can hate listen if you want to. I mean, we're not against that.
Yeah, look, man, you can have whatever opinion you want. It's cool to be wrong.
That's all right. Admitting it is okay.
At JMart and Ramon on Twitter. He's Ramon Foster, Vol for Life, 11 years in the NFL. I'm Jason Martin. So the question I asked before the break, but it is about how you try to rank these teams. But I want to go back to something else Eric talked about that we've talked about off air a few times. Kay Mays was a starter. Kay Mays was not Kelly Bryant losing his job to Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. He was not somebody that was upset because his job was being lost or transferred or whatever else.
Or his career was fizzling out. Like, that wasn't the case. And I've talked to a good buddy of mine that worked in that organization. I asked him, I was like, you know, when I saw him playing, like, left tackle, right tackle, and guard, I'm like, hey, man, what's going on with this kid? Can he not find a position? He was like, no, that's because he's just that good. You know, like, that's the thing about him. He is just that good that he can play left tackle, right tackle, left guard. Like, all across the board, this kid is good. So, like you said, him transferring wasn't an issue of his talent or his ability to get on the field. Heck, he was playing.
I mean, Jalen Hurts, who handled it perfectly, and was as classy and as dignified as you could do it. He still left Alabama because Tua was the starting quarterback there. He went to Oklahoma because he wanted to play another year, and he was able to because he was Jalen Hurts. He was able to go play for a contender and still make the college football playoff, but he wouldn't have left Alabama if he was going to be the starting quarterback for Nick Saban that year.
Exactly. And, you know, he got an opportunity to play right after that. And I just think that something has to be done about the processes of dealing with these kids. These kids are a pivotal part of this university's, if we want to be honest, their revenue and just the heartbeat of what happens. So and even going into the SEC realm of it to say, hey, this monster machine that you guys pump out, as far as it being an NCAA, the amount of money that goes into it, as much as we want to say is amateurism, there's a lot that there's billions of dollars that go into this. And football, of course, in the South, especially in the SEC, we love, March Madness. But when the SEC starts playing football, it is literally a season. People get into a mold about this. I've seen people transform when it's football season. And the fact that you won't have a young kid allowed to play because of a transfer rule, in which it wasn't malice on his part as far as his play. It was just, hey, a bad relationship. Coaches do it all the time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I just tweeted this out from our account at JMart and Ramon. I put up a poll, and I feel like it's going to be a landslide poll, but sometimes you just want to get the barometer of where everybody is, and I'm looking more forward to seeing what people comment on this poll. But it says, does the SEC have a legit case, and do you agree if they choose not to clear Cade Mays to play this season? Yes, no, I'm torn. Right now, 78% say no. Brandon says, time and time again, they continue to kowtow to the top teams in the league. If Cade was transferring to Georgia, he would have been cleared months ago. So the conspiracy theorists are out in force this morning. Russell says, Otis Reese was not a starter, got passed on the depth chart at Georgia. Cade wants to play with his brother. Georgia did not recruit him. And then, you know, he says things about the rumors and all that. So, I mean, you're gonna get this from all sides, man.
It's deeper than that, though. And you know what's crazy? We make a big fuss about it when it's the players. The players. Like, that's the part that's confusing about the support of kids. We support a coach moving from university to university, collecting millions of dollars in his way to those universities. But this kid who's getting a free education, yeah, I get it. But I always ask the question, is it free? I left the University of Tennessee at a time, which I enjoyed, okay, with zero work experience. There's nothing that goes into it. We talked about being insane about making it to the next level. Well, guess what? It's actually kind of pushed down your face a little bit on your contribution to this game. Your schedule is set up. Your class schedule is set up so that you can go to practice. If I wanted to be aeronautical
engineer, Josh Dobbs?
Yes, exactly. You know what he had to do? If I wanted to be Josh, like, there's a lot that goes into it. Luckily for him, he plays the quarterback position, and he's afforded certain things that comes along with that. But – you don't see many finance majors coming out. You see a bunch of sociology, psychology, PE.
Well, think about Sherman. You know? I mean, remember Richard Sherman's comments when he was out at Stanford, and he was just like, you think that it's so easy for us. Our schedule is mapped out before we ever wake up every day, and here's practice, and here is sitting down with the coaches, and here is working out, and all this. He's like, there is no time to do anything as a college athlete.
And I know, you know, everybody lays on that sword that says, well, you're getting a free education. But again, you ask yourself, is it free? I've known plenty of guys that walk through those doors, and when you leave with, okay, I got a paper in sociology, but what does that actually mean if I can't go work a job? And most guys land on their feet, but there's a ton that don't know what they're going to do with their life because their main focus is this game, and you don't give a kid like Cade or anybody else that's transferring an opportunity to say, hey, I want to be able to make a decision the same way as this coach does that's benefit from, I mean, look at Nick Saban's case. He's got a $5 million lake house that the university paid for, and this kid just wants to simply transfer to another university, and I don't buy that he wants to play with his brother. Heck, he'll only have 1 year with his brother. He grew up with his brother his entire life. So I don't look at it
See you just uprooting everything that you've worked to get to where you were just because of that for one year. That seems unlikely.
My brother and I were at the same – we were playing football at the same time. He was at Louisville. I was in Tennessee. I wasn't trying to leave to go play. I'm like, hey, you do your thing. I'll see you in the offseason type of thing. So let the kids play.
Yeah, let them play. 615-737-1045. That's how you can have your say on our say and vote in the poll. Is it fair? Does the SEC have a case if they say no to Cade Mays either today or tomorrow, which you hope they're actually going to make a decision on this? Well, we may still play that Greg Sankey audio. Maybe we'll do it in the next segment as we get to the top of the hour. I still want to discuss, Ramon, how in the world you vote in a college football playoff this year with all of the unique circumstances. So that's where we will go in 4 minutes as we come back for the third hour of the program at J. Martin Ramon on Twitter, 104.5 The Zone.